B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gordon Hayward gets it into Jaylen Brown. The Pacers will not foul. The clock hits triple zeros, and the Celtics, who slogged their way through an 82-game regular season of difficulty, of emotion, of disappointment, are the first team to advance to round two. They hang on and they sweep the Pacers. The final score in game four, Boston 110, Indiana 106.
Hour two, Agenda Free Friday, driven by the Bernardi Auto Group. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com. Break down this series, Maz, Bucks, Celtics, and your opening take. Sorry, between the emails and everything else, I just reset it so we know what you're talking about.
Okay, again. So look, again, you've made the point that the true verdict on Kyrie Irving will come in the second round and beyond when you start going against real teams here. And now you have a real opponent in the Bucks, a team that had the best record in the league. And so I started looking at Kyrie's performance against the Milwaukee Bucks this year. Three games against him. In the first one, he was great. 10 for 20, 6 of 12 from three-point land. He scored 28 points. The Celtics win the game. The next two games, Kyrie went 16 for 47, 34%. They lose them both. So then I started thinking, boy, those are bad numbers. I mean, for a guy like him, those are bad numbers. And I started thinking, what do the Bucks do to slow down Kyrie? And then immediately I thought back to Mike Budenholzer when he was coaching Atlanta, and he is now the coach of the Bucks. When he coached Atlanta, that was the opponent when Isaiah in the Celtics at the time, went and played the Hawks. And in that series, in the two wins, Isaiah shot basically 50%. In the other four games, 24 of 72. He was 33%, and he scored 7 points in one of the games. And I just wonder if Mike Budenholzer is going to take the ball out of Kyrie's hands or try to. And so now there are lots of variables compared to when Isaiah played against a Budenholzer team and they lost in six. Number one is that Kyrie's a better player, but he's bigger than Isaiah, but he still defend him the same way, which is if you can get him in a double team, he's probably not going to be able to get the ball over a double team. So you might want to double him with bigger guys. That's number one. And then, but if Kyrie can get the ball out of there, the Celtics should be better equipped to handle that. So I just wonder, Milwaukee was the best defensive team in the league this year in terms of opponent field goal percentage, particularly on twos inside the three-point line. Like, to me, if I'm Budenholzer and I use the same formula, I'm trying to take the ball out of his hands. And then the question is, can the rest of the Celtics beat me?
Who do you like?
I'm not picking yet. I'm going to wait till Sunday.
I am too. I think the Bucks are.
What are you going to find out between now and Sunday?
Well, I
need to think about it more. I've been focused on other things.
You need to think about it,
Mike,
more.
It feels like these teams haven't played in 2 months now with everything else going on. I want to see how hurt they are without Brogdon, because I do think that is going to hurt Milwaukee in terms of them getting some scoring from the outside.
Wow, Jimmy, you get on me.
I'll tell you what. All right, what's your prediction?
Oh, yeah, what? We sit on the fence for the first time in 2019 while you're doing it every other show when
Correct.
We're getting
yep.
yelled at?
Uh-huh, yep. Exactly. Feels good. feels good on this side. Celtics in seven.
Bucks in five.
Okay. The Bucks better win in five. Bucks better win in five or maybe six, because if it goes seven, they'll lose. If it goes seven and the Celtics are good enough to take, a game in Milwaukee to get it to seven, or if the Celtics win enough to get to a game seven and prove that it's equal, at the end, the Celtics are going to win out. And so I'll just tell you exactly how it's going to happen. That I think each team's going to win one on the road, and it's going to be 3-3 going back to Milwaukee. I'm going to go out there because I'm going to want to watch a game seven in Milwaukee with my peeps, just like the old days. And I'm going to get crushed emotionally in a game seven by the Celtics in Milwaukee on the corner of Water and Third or whatever, wherever that new stadium is. And I'm going to walk home a very sad man on a miserable day, gray, cloudy, miserable day in Milwaukee, losing to the Celtics in a game seven. Just that's how I grew up. And that's what's going to happen.
So I'll tell you what, I think that the key to the series is going to be Hayward. I really believe that, because I think that there are going to be things done to Kyrie to mitigate him in some capacity. And the fact is, he's not 6'8", he's 6'3". allegedly. So I just don't know that, you know, I think ultimately,
well, let me,
if he's going to go into the paint, he's not going to score like he has before. Milwaukee's good in the paint defensively.
Very good. They got good size, and they're, you know, Budenholzer's made all the difference. He's turned them into a modern NBA team, 3-and-D. They shoot the three, they play D, like overnight. Dingleberry, you know, Jason Kidd, no idea how the game is played, and Budenholzer changed it overnight. So they now play the right way. They just don't have as many good players. And their best player, who might be the best player in the series, but I'm still not convinced. I mean, you tell me, Kyrie or Giannis?
This year, Giannis.
Well, tell me what the situation is. In other words, if I need a bucket at the end of the game, Kyrie.
Okay, well, I mean, I just think you've proven my point that
it's based on the situation.
Close.
Yeah, it's close. So, I mean, I don't even know if the Bucks have, you know, clearly the best player in the series. They might, but it's debatable. But the surrounding cast isn't the same as what Boston has. Boston has a much better surrounding cast that hates each other and doesn't play well together and has been a mess this year. So, but they're just talent for talent better. They just are. And Giannis is still an imperfect player, and I think it's going to be, it's got to show itself in the playoffs at some point. Detroit couldn't do it, obviously. They suck, and they didn't have Blake Griffin, but it becomes a half-court game, and Giannis is not the same player if he doesn't have a head of steam off the break, in the open floor, all of that. If you can get it to be a half-court game and get him the ball and force him to get the ball outside of the paint, it's, and not without Brogdon, it's him and Middleton, and then some guys that are okay, and then a bunch of the other guys, Lopez and the rest, will stand around the three-point line, and they can hit, and they'll definitely shoot it, but it's not like what you have. It's just not.
Middleton scares me a ton in this series. He's hurt the Celtics.
Yeah, absolutely he should.
So he's the guy that scares me.
But here's what I think the key's going to be is Bledsoe, who's a freaking loser. Who's a loser. He plays like an idiot and is a loser. And especially without Brogdon there, it's going to be all about Bledsoe. And listening to the Green Teamers, and I'll play some sound right now, like they get the feeling that Bledsoe's going to try and take this on himself because he's still all butthurt about what happened last year where he got beat up by Terry Rozier and it hurt his manhood. And so, Eric Bledsoe's going to show the Celtics, jackass, and it's going to become about Eric Bledsoe, who sucks. Or is okay, can be okay on certain nights, but is a real idiot. Here is Sean Grandy. Sean Grandy on earlier with Beadle and Zoe talking about the Bucks, Giannis, but who he's really worried about.
The Giannis recipe, what to do, is not complicated to understand. As Kenny Smith put it so very well on TNT, it's a version of the kind of stuff we've been saying for the last couple of years. 15, 18 feet from the basket beyond, he's Clark Kent. Once he gets inside the free throw line, he's Superman, and you can't stop him. So it's going to be multiple guys, and where does he get the ball? And can you stop him from, I've never seen anybody get to the rim. He gets to the rim in one stride from the free throw line. That's why he said, since they've been keeping track of dunks, he had more this year than anybody's ever had. So he's just a dominant force. And again, one of the reasons why they are not the team they were last year between Giannis and the guy that, to me, as an athlete, when you lose, people move on. You forget last year's series, right? You know who didn't forget last year's series and has been living with it for a year? Eric Bledsoe has. And he is. It's funny because he doesn't have the same matchup with Rozier. Obviously, he's got to deal with Kyrie. But this moment, this series has been driving Eric Bledsoe, the specter of getting a second chance against Boston for a year. He was great in the first round against Detroit. And he right now, to me, is the wild card in the series.
Ha! Well, if he's a wild card in the series, the Bucks lose. If he's a wild card. So
I think Bledsoe's a bum.
Bum. Loser. And I mean, I'm going to be a little harsh, but He got his ass handed to him by Terry Rozier last year in some of the games. In Boston, he did anyway. Now he's going to man up Kyrie Irving? Oh, they're porked if this is what it's coming down to.
You got to hate hearing that as a Bucks fan.
I hate it.
I'll tell you, though, the Celtics have their own set of problems in this series, Mike. And one of them is that, like, you know, they like to play Horford down on the block to create a little bit of inside-outside, or at least some of the time they like to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be able to do that in this series. I mean, maybe it'll surprise me, but I feel like they're going to have trouble scoring near the hoop. They're going to have difficulty doing that, and which is going to relegate them to shooting from the outside and shooting threes. And if they get into that and they start missing, they're in trouble.
Well, and defensively, it's going to be something similar because the Bucks again have gotten with the program, and they stand their bigs out on the 3-point line. Brooke Lopez will stand out there and chuck threes all day. So that does clear things out for Giannis. That's going to draw Horford out or the big guys out or Baines, if whoever big guy you got in there to help mitigate Giannis.
I think it's going to be Ojale. Someone's going to be surprised.
Well, okay, but that's on Giannis. But whatever help you're going to get, the big guy's going to have to run out with Lopez because Lopez stands out on the 3-point line.
Correct. Yeah. So in which case, I think on that one, you sort of flip and you put maybe Baines on the freak and send Horford out to the 3-point line. I don't know. I don't know what they do, but the paint's going to be a problem in this series.
You can also just follow Giannis. He's a 73% free throw shooter. Is that so? You tell me. If a guy shoots 73%, it's not hacky Giannis. It's not that bad. But
you got to pound him, though.
Pound him.
Yeah, you do. You have to pound him.
Pound him. Send him to the line. He's going to miss, you know, one of every four. Save yourself a point every other trip down the floor. I don't know. Just do the math. I'm sure some nerd has done the math.
I mean, I think that that has to be, again, I don't think that's revolutionary. You have to body him up and you got to hammer him.
The number one thing is getting back. The number one thing is getting back on defense for the Celtics. On misses, get your ass back. When he gets a full head of steam, forget about it. It's over. Over. And if they're not going to call traveling on him, which they don't, He takes three steps. He stops dribbling at the 3-point line and gets to the rim. So forget about it. Just get back. Make them play half court. And if he gets it inside, foul him. I mean, that's really what I do. And make the other guys on the Bucks beat you. The other guys on the Bucks aren't nearly good enough. Middleton is. Middleton's good enough. He'll hit, and he's clutch.
He is clutch. He scares me. He is the one guy that I see. If I see the ball in his hands at the end of the game and the Celtics decide to cover him, which they didn't do during the regular season at the end of that one game, that he'll bury you. He will absolutely kill you.
The wild card for you is the same thing that it was during the regular season. How do you all, you know, get along? If you lose the first two in Milwaukee, which happens, you know, just you lose road games.
Well, the finger pointing and bitching.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You come down 0-2, and then is there the gap between games two and three? And
oh, I'm sure it's the NBA playoffs.
There's a couple of two day breaks,
extra day to have a bitchy plane flight, and yeah. I don't know. Like that's sort of thing you got to look out for you. That's the reason you're in this spot to begin with, starting on the road. It's the only reason you're starting on the road. You're starting on the road because you couldn't get along. And it just didn't work, you know, from that standpoint, which can still come up in the playoffs, which as a Bucks fan is what I'm rooting for. But if that doesn't happen, Celtics in seven. So there's your Celtics thoughts. Back to your phones on everything right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Who, besides Giannis, who scares you with the remaining guys? You know, Bledsoe, Middleton. Who scares you other than Giannis on that team?
Well, I mean, Middleton was unbelievable last year against us in the playoffs. I mean, he really shot the ball well and made shots against great defense, and so Middleton obviously has our attention from what he did to us last year, and I think Bledsoe has really had a great year this year, and I think those three guys are obviously the keys to their team.
Danny Ainge on this morning with Toucher and Richard. Ted Johnson, you heard right there. And Fred, full interview on 98.5thesportshub.com and on the app. I'll give you Middleton. Got to respect that. If it comes down to Eric Bledsoe, you win. That's all.
He's a bum. Yeah, but and you know what? He'll get easily distracted. Like, they'll suck him right out of his game. I'm not worried about him, but Middleton scares the crap out of me.
What's that number you were just looking at in the break?
Jimmy Stewart, our producer, looked it up. In 27 career games against the Celtics, he is shooting 45% from three-point land.
That's really good.
45%. He kills the Celtics. He absolutely annihilates the Celtics, for crying out loud. So he scares the crap out of me. Absolutely. And I'm just looking it up. Last year in the playoff series, because that was Milwaukee's only series, you know what he shot from three-point land?
I don't.
Take a guess.
45%.
61. 61% from three-point land. 60-effing-1. The Celtics have guys on their team that can't do that from the free throw line, for crying out loud. Like, that's absurd. They got to cover this guy, or they'll lose.
Okay. Your thoughts on everything, again, Agenda Free Friday. Here is Justin in the car on a trade apparently going down today in the NFL with Josh Rosen. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, guys. So first of all, I do like the Pats' first-round draft pick, but I feel like where they're only 8 picks back with their second-round pick from the Dolphins, who are picking at 48, Pats at 56, I feel like they could have worked something out where they got Josh Rosen and got that wide receiver in the first round, so they kind of could have had their cake and ate it too. I mean, I guess you don't really know, but I think they could have done it. I don't know. Your guys' thoughts.
Okay, so as Murray's been reporting, the Miami Dolphins allegedly have a trade worked out for Josh Rosen, number 48 overall for Rosen. Is that it?
Yeah, but, I mean, other NFL reporters like Ian Rappaport and other real plugged-in guys are saying, like, nothing's official yet, so it hasn't actually happened.
Who originally reported it?
Pro Football Talk. So, Mike Florio.
It was coming up during the middle of the first round last night that Miami was putting on pressure to get Rosen.
It's good to go. I trust Florio. I do. So that's a good trade for Miami. That's a good
Hell
trade
yeah,
for Miami.
It is.
That's a good. You take a shot on a guy. Maybe that's your franchise guy. And if it's not, you lost the 48th pick. What have you really lost? You haven't really invested. You're paying him peanuts. It's not even like you have to give him that big first round quarterback contract. It's not even like if you're Miami, you're compelled to play him or you're compelled to build the team around him. It's more of like a let's see for 48 and the money that he's on the books for, which is not much. That's a really good move for the Dolphins. I would have loved to have seen the Patriots do it. If they don't like him, they don't like him, though. I mean, that's all. If they liked him and they weren't willing to give up the 32nd pick, then
I'll be mad.
Then I'll be mad. You know, then I would hate it. This is another one of these. Let's see in a couple years.
I've been anti-drafting any of these quarterbacks this year, but if they were into him and they didn't want to flip 32, then that's a problem.
So, you know, you got Sam Darnold now in the division and this guy, both, you know, highly touted top 10 quarterbacks from the year before. Let's see. I mean, this poor Josh Rosen is going to be surrounded by absolute dog food there. So I don't know how it's going to be tough to tell what he is.
I mean, for that matter, the Bills have a young guy, too. I mean, they all did.
That's right. Brandon in the car on Tyreek Hill in that situation. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Happy Friday. I heard the entire audio on TNR this morning and then again on Zolak and Bertrand, and I don't know. I'm just I really hope the NFL gets it right this time and can, you know, keep this guy out of the league. I think it's absolutely horrible, you know, what was said. I'm not even going to get into what was said. I mean, anyone can, you know, hear the audio now, but it was, I don't know, I got a three-year-old son myself. I think it's pretty, you know, it's just disgusting.
Yeah, horrible. Bad dude. Seems like a bad dude. Bad dude. I don't know what you want to, I mean, I don't know where to go with this.
Well, so look, this is now the cynic in me, okay? Because again, none of us like it. I just can't take, Patriots fans at face value on this.
I was going to say, I think all you want to do is bitch about Goodell. So I'm not going to feed that.
Well, and not only that, but Kansas City's a threat. They've already lost Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
So they've already lost Kareem Hunt. Now you want them to lose Tyreek Hill too. So again, I I'm not, what the guy did allegedly is horrible. Like, who, you know, broke a kid's arm? So who's going to defend that? Nobody's going to defend that. I just can't take it at face value from Patriots fans.
Right. Where's your heart at? Are you really concerned about the children? Or is it a chief rival who could lose one of their best players? Or do you just really want to cry about Goodell? So that's why I have a hard time feeding you that story.
And we all know he has crushed the Patriots. He has hurt them badly in the games that they've played head-to-head.
Anthony in Medford on the Bruins. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yeah, Mike. I know Cassie's been a little critical of Connor Rass, but I think he's the best coach that's got the most out of Tuca, because You've seen how Anderson played all the games besides the last one, and Tuukka played pretty good. And then you got Bobrovsky in this round. He played down. He almost stole that game. And Tuukka, those first two goals weren't his fault.
Oh, not
usually
at all.
Before, that's when he'd stack the go on the crapper, but he bounced back. He played dynamite, Mike.
He was terrific. Do we give Cassidy credit?
Sure, some for pushing the buttons and getting them focused.
I mean, it's really on Rask. It's 97% on Rask, but you want to give just a little head nod to Cassidy for
challenging him,
and then making sure that the other guy played when he deserved to play, and Rask's workload is down. And I'll give Cassidy a little bit, but I don't want to take anything away from Rask because he's playing well.
But I think the message from the beginning of the year has been consistent, which is if you go bad, we're making a change. You know, you're not getting 55, 60 games just because you're you.
And Cassidy made sure to keep that message going into the postseason. How many times did he tell us about Halak's playoff track record? We have two guys who've had playoff track records, and we have faith in both goalies. The way he answered the question every single time.
You know, I wonder if it was an organizational strategy, and, you know, Cassidy's speaking the, you know,
right.
He's speaking the part, but the reality is they're all on the same page.
Well, it's about time. That's all I have to say. It's about time. Adam in Rhode Island. Jimmy, can you pop up line 5 for me, please? I am frozen out here. Adam in Rhode Island on the Bruins last night. Go ahead, please.
If I were to ask you, yeah. So if I was going to ask you through the first 8 games of the playoffs, same record, 5-3 win-loss. One goalie is 9.24 save percentage with a .234 goals against. The other one's 9.27 save with 2.25 goals against. Which goalie would you pick?
I'd say they're almost exactly the same.
And I know who you're talking about.
But which one would you pick? Just a simple question.
The one with the better numbers, slightly better numbers.
Okay, cool. So you'd go with Tuukka Rask over Tim Thomas.
Right. See, I knew what you were doing, though, because I know those are Thomas's numbers. And what I would also tell you is, how did Thomas play the rest of the way?
Fantastic.
Okay, and, so the point is he sustained it.
Correct.
And he was at his absolute best. Particularly, there was one ridiculous save I still remember on that Tampa, the paddle save that he made. And then in the finals, he was off the charts, right?
Sure. Just real quick, Matt. So you could argue that Tim actually started off worse and then got better towards the end.
Yes.
Whereas Tuukka has been basically with the same stats throughout the first 8 games of the playoffs.
So, yeah. Look, I don't know why we're yelling at each other. If Tuukka Rask,
I'm not yelling.
I mean, yell away. I don't know what we're arguing about. If Tuukka Rask wants to haul off and play this well,
sure.
Go play this well. Who's gonna?
Just real quick, Mike. Just real quick, though. Yeah. You will admit that there was a significant amount of time spent going into the playoffs with most of the discussion centered around, first of all, whether or not they would have to pull Rask, and then secondly, obviously, you know, the questions and concerns.
Do you think that was unwarranted, Adam? Do you think it's over?
I think it's unwarranted. No, I don't think it's unwarranted, but I do think that there's this, like, weird, non-factual, like, bias against the goaltender that's, like, pretty cliche.
No,
it's just not supported by performance.
Yeah, people don't trust him, Adam. And thanks for the call,
that's
Jimmy.
Fair.
If you drop him. I don't think people trust Rask, and I think that is Rask's doing, not people's doing.
I've seen Rask play well for 8 postseason games. I've seen it.
I mean, that's really the salient point.
Tim Thomas did it for 25.
You need 16 wins. They have 5.
So listen, he's a third of the way there. You really going to start playing that card now?
No, I mean, so I'll give him credit for the third. But really, that's the whole point. I mean, Thomas carried you to a cup. He didn't carry you to game one of the second round.
The whole question with Tuukka is the sustainability. That's the question. He can play great in flashes. He had a good series against Tampa last year. He had a fabulous series against Pittsburgh in 2013.
Maybe he can play great for a run. I haven't seen it yet, but maybe this is it. It happens. He wouldn't play the age game. Thomas did it only once in his life, and he was 36. How old was he when he did it?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Rask is 30 or 31. So maybe it just came late to him. If he wants to do it, God bless. Do it. Please. Love to see it. No argument there. Here's Murray's update, and we're back with more.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Atkinson upset at something. He's barking. There's a broken stick out.
I think Marchand might have broken it. May have stepped on it. Stepped on his blade. Must be his lucky stick. He's pretty upset. He gives Marchand a little shot on his way through. Bet that's what happened. You know, the guy puts a stick in your skate, you step on it. Off the faceoff.
I'm all for being a thorn in the opponent's side. But look at this right here. You see Marchand stomping on Atkinson's stick. To me, that language in overtime is telling the referees, it's showing a disrespect, and it's insulting the referees in this situation because you're saying, it's overtime, you ain't calling this. That's a penalty clear cut through every day of the week. My point is, for what? What is the point? You're in overtime. You're lucky they didn't call it. Then he goes, and when Atkinson comes back, Atkinson gives him a little bit of a bump. Marchand blindly swings his stick around and gets him in the neck. That hits him in the face and drops him. Now you gotta, it's just not worth it. This guy, I love him as a hockey player. He's going to, you don't want to be the Naz Kadri in this situation. We know what's going on in Toronto with that situation. He's good. He has to move past it. Quit doing that. He just played the game. They won, but he's lucky that neither of those things were called right there. His team could have very easily lost this game.
And that's Mike Rupp on the NHL Network. I just found that interesting. And I don't know if you noticed it. I didn't, being at the game. I mean, I remember the little scrum. It was a neutral zone faceoff in overtime, right before they won it, really. Mm-hmm. Just a minute before or so. After an offside, so a neutral zone faceoff. And it was like Marchand and Atkinson were sort of barking at each other, and Atkinson had to go get a new stick. But me being in the crowd, I couldn't tell what was going on, and I don't know if the NBC broadcast covered it. Did they mention anything about it?
Oh no, they got it.
Oh, on TV, got it.
Not live, but they picked it up. They were on it.
Okay, so but that's from the NHL Network and Mike Rupp this morning. And so what happened is Atkinson and Marchand are standing next to each other waiting for the faceoff, and Marchand stomps on his stick and breaks it. And Atkinson has to skate to the bench. And then when Atkinson comes back, he just sort of gives Marchand a little shove in the back as he's getting back in position. And Marchand takes his stick and swings it around and sort of slashes him just below the neck. And it was just, you know, you could say on one hand sort of an innocuous thing, but Mike Rupp didn't think it was that innocuous. If that's a regular season game, they call a penalty. And the point there is that Marchand's sort of playing with fire there.
Well, so I just think that the problem is you could argue, and again, the part I didn't see on NBC was whether Atkinson actually stuck his stick in Marchand's skate blade and whether he was just messing with him. Marchand says, oh, all right, fine, like Beers was saying. And you know what? Fine. Stepped on it and broke the stick.
The still picture we have is Marchand's stick is in Atkinson's space just as much as vice versa. Their sticks are just sort of crossed, standing there waiting for the faceoff.
So there was one photo they showed where Atkinson's stick is against the back of Marchand's skate plate.
Okay.
So maybe it's one of those where I'm going to, you know, knock your skate plate out and you're going to fall on your... I don't know. I mean, I'm just... So again, that's a finer point that's beyond me. Okay, so there was one photo up there where his...
Okay.
So Marchand might be right.
Yep.
Right? But the point is this to me... You're Marchand. You're going to get busted.
Right. They'll blame you.
Cam Neely ran into this all the time when he played. You retaliate, you'll get popped because you're you. So you know what? And you own that. By the way, the fact that they're looking for you is your fault. So you want to say Atkinson's every bit the weasel Marchand is? Fine. I don't know the player's reputation enough. I know he scores a ton of goals. Okay? That aside. But if Marchand retaliates, he's going to get popped. And you know what? It feels to me like Columbus is already baiting him because they know. They're doing a better job of it than Toronto did.
If you are Columbus, you absolutely bait the hook.
Mike, it's game one. He's already losing his mind.
And now, all that said, considering nothing really happened, kind of cool.
It's funny. Yeah. It's funny. It's so Marchand. And he was good last night. I mean, yeah. That move he made on Morenski in the first period where he flew around him on the blue line, there's sort of a pass coming to him in the middle of the ice, and he olayed him. And, of course, Bobrovsky stoned him, but what a brilliant move that was. He cranks the crossbar in the second period. I mean, Marchand was good, and he is good, and they can't lose that guy. So just be careful on the dinking around, shall we?
I feel like he's really the only guy on that quote-unquote first line that is playing to his ceiling. Even Bergeron. Look, I love Bergeron. He's not at his peak, and maybe there's something going on there, too. Martian's the only one to me that's playing at his level.
Okay, back to your phones on everything here on an Agenda-Free Friday. Matt in Framingham on Keneal Harry. Quickly.
Nikhil.
All right.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to talk about the Celtics, but, you know, I'm not going to say it.
Just be quick on whatever you got.
Don't sleep on Greek the Freak. That's it. but I'd be amiss if I didn't mention John Havlicek. My father used to always talk about him, and my father was a captain on the Air Force basketball team, and, you know, he loved Havlicek. So I wanted to get into his draft. I think that the worst pick was Danny Jones, and right after that came, I think, the two best value picks, Allen and the tight end from Iowa. But as far as the Patriots go, you know, in the middle of right simultaneously as you were dropping and plopping, I was listening to Jones on the app, you know, go with his pants off running around the studio because he, you know, had hit also on that player. But that was the wrong player to take as wide receiver. I'm happy they didn't take quarterback, but they should have took Metcalf. Metcalf, it was the 16th overall rank.
So, Matt, I got to stop you. That's a minute.
Jones okay. loves this N'Keal Harry.
So, fine. Yeah. Jones watches college football. This is one of these guys, the useless college football draft analysis. Jones will fill your face with it. He'll stuff your face till you are stuffed like a Thanksgiving Day turkey or being led to slaughter.
What a rarity. Jones took his pants off in celebration of it.
He liked Sony Michel, too.
So, Jones will tell you about these guys, what they did in college, and I would say the same thing. Oh, you actually, here's Jones's reaction. Go ahead.
The New England Patriots select N'Keal
Harry. Oh! Jones! Jones has done it! Jones has done it!
You gotta be kidding me.
Suck it, Boston! That's right! Yeah! Jones big board! And Jones did it without hucking a marker. Now, I have to tell you, the only thing I didn't like about making N'Keal Harry my one guy, not one of 35 Felger and Maz hucking your markers, my one guy... The only thing I don't like it is that the Felger and Maz big board hit, too.
I know.
I'm annoyed by that now. I hit on the guy. By the way, love the pick. N'Keal Harry, they have a comp of Dez Bryant on the screen on NFL Network right now. Dumbest comp I've ever read. Okay, I'm sure he goes
There's like 3 more minutes, but yeah, that's good enough.
Jones actually watches this crap.
I just like there's a lot of third person. I didn't know he did, though. That's great.
Jones has done it! It's tremendous. Jones has no idea whether this guy can play any more than you do, any more than really the Patriots do. Get back to me in 2 years. Does it concern you that they've actually drafted for need so glaringly?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Build around Brady. And there's another thing about this guy. Whose assessment did you read that said he goes up and gets it? Was that Tom Curran?
Yes.
And he's 6 what?
6'3".
Huh.
Change.
So... I don't know.
He's 6'2".
That goes up and gets it, a jump ball type of wide receiver. They made all these changes to the stupid pass interference rule. Do you know think there's a correlation there a little bit, maybe?
He's going to draw a lot of PI?
Maybe.
Curran writes that Harry is a 6'2", 228-pound, ball-attacking, high-pointing, back-shouldering acrobat.
228, that's big.
Yeah, Curran had his pants off, too. Who's got durability, after-the-catch toughness, hammerlock hands, and savvy to body up defenders and win contested catches. In other words, if the Patriots were going to break their annual tradition of staying away from first-round receivers, Harry is the perfect one to do it for.
Yeah, I just assume they didn't break from their tradition. Now look again.
You're probably all mad. Oh, they didn't take Drew Lock.
No, you know what? I told you, if you would listen to our draft discussion, Murray, and I know you don't, but that's okay. That's fine. I would have told you I wanted a defensive lineman. I said that all along. I didn't want a receiver in the first round. Given their history with receivers, and when I say their history, I'm talking about, whoa, the complicated offense, Brady's patience, all of this stuff. What are the odds that this actually works?
Oh, with these stupid new pass interference rules, and he can go up and get it and win those battles? Probably pretty good.
Let's pick this up on the other side. We're running late. I just think Jones is playing with fire, besmirching the power of the Felger Maz big board. Because we didn't just hit one player 1 year, Jones. We've hit 7 out of the last 8 years. We've given you 8 players in the last 8 years. We've given you the top player off the board in 3 of the last 4 years, and the 4th year... They only drafted 4 players in about 2017, and they had no picks in the first 2 rounds, which 2017 shouldn't count. We didn't hit, but they didn't even draft anybody that year. 2017, they had only 4 picks, and their first one was 83rd overall in Derek Rivers. So throw that out. We've given you the last 3 top picks off the board. Are you doing that, running around out there with your pants off?
Yeah, suck it, Jones.
Suck it, Jones.
Yeah,
back with
suck
more.
Suck it, Jones.
After this, more. Jones big board, and Jones did it without hucking a marker. Felger.
visit us.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Is Hunter Renfrow on this page?
Nope.
Go
ahead, Anthony.
Like all right, here you go. This marker is pink.
Okay.
Nice shot, Maz, and you keep wrecking
on really it. Same spot. Yeah. The same spot. I hit that clip. It's just to the left of the clip.
Sure. Hakeel Harry?
Oh, N'Keal Harry.
N'Keal? N'Keal.
Yeah.
N'Keal in this case is spelled N'Keal. N'Keal.
Who's he play for?
N'Keal Harry's from Arizona State, Maz.
Ooh.
He goes at 6'3 and 5'8.
Oh, they could use some size with the Lilliputians they have.
6'3 and 5'8, 216 pounds. Strong points. Harry has great size with long arms.
Oh, great.
Well built and strong, explosive athlete with speed, quick feet, change of direction, flexibility, and body control.
Downside, can't catch the ball.
Weak points. He's fast, but not in the 4-3 range fast. I don't care about that.
Me neither.
If he isn't the primary, there are times Harry doesn't give maximum effort. Welcome to the wide receiver position.
Typical receiver.
Yep. He did not play in Arizona State's bowl game. Because he sat out. Good for him.
Yeah, who wants to?
Makes him smart. Put him on the board. I think we have a chance there.
Or selfish.
N'Keal Harry out of Arizona State. Put him on the Felger and Maz big board.
N'Keal.
With the 32nd pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the New England Patriots select N'Keal Harry, wide receiver, Arizona State.
On your knees, Jones. On your knees. With all your draft spreadsheets and all your dorky college football knowledge. On your knees. You know how much time you invested and how much bad college football you had to watch on a Saturday afternoon to come up with N'Keal Harry when we did it in about 3 minutes of chucking markers at a magazine? This is the whole point. This is the whole point. You're just as likely to hit knowing as not knowing. It's the same difference. That's the whole point of the Felger and Maz big board.
I'm annoyed by that now.
You should be. Because you've devoted your life to college football and the dorky science of the NFL draft.
The only thing I don't like it is that the Felger and Maz big board hit too.
Suck it, Jones.
I'm annoyed by that now.
On your knees with the rest of you draft nerds.
Bow.
Bow before the Felger and Maz big board.
It's uncanny, this thing.
Oh!
It really is.
Seriously, though, right?
7 out of 8, including the last three first-round picks, and Cyrus Jones was a second, but the last three top player off the board.
My one guy, not one of 35, Felger and Maz, hucking your markers.
Your 1 year, Jones, versus 7 of 8. It's okay. Get on your knees with the rest of yous. I want to circle back real quick to...
You know, when I threw that ball, the board spoke to me.
Hey, a couple of... And we got
my
more,
one guy.
We got more to go, Jones. We got another... Six, seven rounds to go, and a bunch of guys on this board. So your nightmare has just begun, friend. They still have a quarterback to pick. Where was I? Bruins things. A couple Bruins things. Marchand, while I get on him for the... Well, and I didn't really get on him. I just found it interesting, you know, that he was sort of playing with the line a little bit there in overtime, stomping on Cam Atkinson's stick and slashing him across the neck. He also had a great zinger today with the media. Now, David Krejci's out. David Krejci's out, or he was out for overtime last night, and he's listed as day-to-day. We'll get to him in 1 second. It's a huge loss for the Bruins. Happened in the third period. Riley Nash, remember him? Had a really good year for the Bruins last year, third, fourth liner. And he lit up Krejci late in the third period. When I mean late, the puck was gone. And Krejci played through it. He played through the third period, but he did not come out for the overtime. So Riley Nash on a late hit hurt Krejci. Here's Brad Marchand today in the locker room talking about the physical nature of the series.
You know, even when you get guys like Nash or who start finishing hits,
And I don't think he had a hit in 2 years with us, so.
I don't think he had a hit in 2 years with us, he says about Riley Nash.
And I don't think he had a hit in 2 years with us, so.
I like that. Now, that'll take. That'll take. Oh, where was this? Where was this, Riley? Now you come back and play your old team, like the oldest cliche in the book. So this right. is what
all,
it takes.
All of a sudden, you're a tough guy?
Yeah, all of a sudden, you're lighting up David Krejci. So maybe the Bruins, hopefully they've taken a number on their old buddy Nasher. Nasher didn't check anybody for 2 years here.
I just think it means more bad blood is coming. I mean, the hitting came fast and furious early last night, and that was all the talk going into this thing. Like, oh, this is going to be a more physical series. It was.
And it was. When the opening faceoff, Chard bent someone over yes. the boards.
Yeah.
And it was back and forth the entire game. So that's coming, and I think that's good for the Bruins, but now it becomes a war of attrition.
This is where the rest may benefit Columbus.
Definitely.
Know?
Eventually it's going to. Last night it benefited the Bruins to start the game, the nature of their rest and your playing every other night. But both teams want to play the game, so that's fine. I'm not like the Bruins are going to stand up to it, but are they going to get hurt in the process? You know, all those little D they got back there. Can Krug and Grizzlick and even Clifton, who I love physically, is on the smaller side. Can they stand up to all of that? David Krejci already out. Now, for how long? Do we think he's hurt? It's not a concussion. Cassidy was... Well, I want you to... Let's try and guess. Just based on Bruce Cassidy's comments,
mm-hmm.
how he said what he said and what he said, let's just try and read into it and gauge how hurt Krejci is. Here's Cassidy last night.
Have you talked to Krejci yet? Is he going to be okay? What's your read on that so far?
I have not talked to him. He didn't finish the game. We saw that. I would rule him as day-to-day for now. First, someone said to me, oh, is he in pro? No, he's not. It's not a concussion. He got hit, and he left the game. And by the time that he was available to come back, the game's over. So we'll see how he is in the morning. Hopefully, I have an update for you then if it's anything more serious than day-to-day.
By the time he was available to come back, okay? So how crafty is Bruce Cassidy? Was that just an honest statement? He was available to come back. It was by the time he was available to come back, the puck was in the net and we were done. So he was available to come back? Or is Cassidy intentionally saying that because he wasn't coming back? Here's Bruce Cassidy now today, whatever, 12 hours later.
Krejci came in today. He'll be continue to be listed as day-to-day. So we'll see how he is tomorrow. We'll let you know in the morning whether he's in or out or warm-up. Could be a game-time decision.
Do we believe him?
I tend to. So again, source told me it was shoulder, and then I heard again back because you're like, find out what kind of shoulder, Murray. So that I don't have definitively, but last night in the locker room, not wearing any slings, harnesses, anything like that. Also saw him leave the building by himself, no sling, anything on his arm or shoulder. So take that for what it's worth.
Oh, so that's a good sign if there's yeah. no sling. I mean, that one I would say that you know, maybe it's a mild separation as opposed to a more severe separation.
Is it also a pain thing? I mean, you're saying, I mean, again, dislocation, separation, there's a difference. One's really bad. One, you just pop it back in and keep going. It's susceptible to pop back out, but you can do it if you can handle the pain. Could there have been pain medication in the period break there before the overtime? The overtime period break is shorter than a period break period.
Right,
break.
Absolutely.
And did the meds not kick in and so he wasn't available? Like, is it with something like that?
I wouldn't rule that out.
Because
or maybe they were waiting back for, you know, to get some sort of immediate test result that they were doing. It could be anything.
We're just guessing. But, you know, Cassidy's lying. By the time he was available to come back, if he's lying there, that's a very crafty line. Like, credit there. I mean, that's really playing a game to slip that in there, to just sort of subtly let people know he was available to come back because you know he ain't coming back. So I don't know how to read it. We'll see. Important guy. I think the emergence of Charlie Coyle at center, I still think they can survive. I really do. All the way to the cup? No. But Coyle has been terrific. Corrali's been good. He's a center. So if you just move Coyle up, move Corrali up, it's not like an abject disaster. It's not as bad as I would have thought it would have been just 2 weeks ago. But I don't know if you win a cup without David Krejci.
See, I don't think you can win the whole thing without him. And look, I guess it depends on who you play and how the road goes. So in theory, could they win this series and then the next one? Without Krejci, maybe. Yeah, I mean, as you spell it out like that, maybe. I mean, because the road is favorable. But to win the whole thing, I think you're going to need him. I think the thing that made the Bruins different this year was Krejci.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.